there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 320. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such an incredible show for you this week with two amazing guests. We must start with the first one. Ronnie Wu is an insanely talented professional chef and culinary personality. He completed a culinary program in association with the Northwest Culinary Academy of Vancouver while simultaneously creating his food blog, The Delicious Cook, which I love. Within a handful of months, Ronnie began receiving requests for dinner parties and larger events, and thus began his career as a private chef. Since then, he's worked with high-profile clients such as Jessica Alba, Charlie Sheen, Kathy Griffin, Holly Robinson Peay, Dita Von Teese, and Nancy O'Dell. In addition, he's appeared on numerous TV shows, including Homemade Simple on the OWN Network, and he's a regular contributor to Good Day Los Angeles and Home and Family. He is the host and chef expert of Food to Get You Laid, a cooking and relationship show that airs on the Logo channel. You can check it out straight away. They have episodes online. But before you do that, let's hear from him. Ronnie, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hey, Ken. Thanks so much for having me. This is very exciting, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
We have so much ground to cover, sir. Are you ready?
I think I'm ready.
Let's start generally. Why the medium of food to get your voice out there?
Why the medium of food? I think food is such a great way for self-expression, and I think that, you know, every chef has their own way of expressing their culinary arts and their talents as well. So I think that it's just a really good way of expressing yourself. And so that kind of leads me into the topic of my show, Food to Get You Laid.
Yeah. Can we go back to early Ronnie Wu childhood? Were you always a chef in the kitchen?
Oh, my God. Early Ronnie Wu childhood. No, I have great memories with my family. Funny enough, I actually did not spend a whole lot of time in the kitchen cooking. I spent a lot of time in the kitchen with my mom eating and eating the things that she made for me. But funny enough, she never really actually had me participate in cooking. So that's probably where it came from, in the sense that it's like, I'm the kind of person that if you don't let me do something, I want to do it more. So my mom, by not letting me cook, made me want to cook even more, hence me being a chef today.
You know, one of our favorite stories, one of our favorite narrative threads on the show over the years is not just the coming out process, but that coming out in a certain career process. What was it like telling your family, this is the route I'm going to go with my career? I'm going to be immersed in food.
That's actually a really good comparison, a really good parallel as well. The funny thing is, I grew up in a family where you get two career choices. You can either become a doctor or a lawyer.
Okay.
And, you know, your typical Asian family. And telling them I was going to become a chef, because the funny thing is, my career as a chef was not very linear. It actually kind of goes in all different directions. You know, I had to first sort of come out to them and tell them I was going to be a fashion model and move to L.A. And so I became a fashion model. Signed with a couple of big agencies. And then, funny enough, I was like, I want to go back to school and go into psychology, you know,
nice.
And help people out with their mental health. And then, you know, I went through school, got my master's in marriage and family therapy, and then did an internship at the most extreme internship I could find, which was a sex and addiction clinic.
Oh, yeah.
And I really wanted to sort of challenge myself and just find out about, you know, me and who I was and what I was capable of, you know, handling. And, you know, what I did learn is that I'm a good enough therapist to know that I'm not a good therapist. I think I'm too blunt, too blatant, and I'm a little bit too goofy. So I think sitting in a room with people trying to be serious, I tend to sort of make light of everything. And so funny enough, it's when I first started dating my now husband is when I realized that I wanted to sort of make a career out of food. And it's funny because it ties into the show very, very well, in the sense that every time we had a long distance relationship for 6 months.
Yeah.
Every single time we saw each other, or he would come visit me, I would make him a meal. And that was sort of kind of how I pulled him in and then tied him up. Figuratively speaking, obviously.
Obviously. And also, I mean, this is a good career choice because I think a blog called The Delicious Therapist, that doesn't sound good.
No, that actually sounds like I'm breaking a lot of the HIPAA rules and breaking a lot of the therapist standards that I'm not supposed to break.
No shortage of clientele, but inappropriate, Ronnie, inappropriate.
Yeah, but I'm all about inappropriateness, so I think that it could have worked, but I think just to stay out of hot water, I think I'm going to sort of, you know, stay away from that.
We're a family show. We're a family show. It's all good.
We're a family show, yes. I'm sure I hear that you're a family show.
Before we get to the show that we're going to talk all about, I know you get this question all the time, but I still have to ask you regardless. I know many before me have asked you, all right, so you're in the kitchen, you're working with food all the time. How in the heck do you stay in shape?
Yeah, I do get that question a lot. It's a good question. For me, it's in all seriousness, it's all about moderation.
Yeah.
'Cause I don't actually feel like I live my life with limits or restrictions, but I think the key is moderation. So, you know, I do have a cheat day, which is generally extended to two cheat days, like Saturday and Sunday. But during the week, I'm pretty disciplined. I ration what I eat. I prep a lot of my food in advance. And then, you know, I do go to the gym maybe a couple hours a day. And if I have a busy day, I'll wake up earlier just to go. Funny enough, it does energize me, and it actually helps clear my mind. So there's a lot more to it than just going to the gym to stay, you know, in shape. There's actually, like, a whole mental part to it as well. And also, I kind of enjoy it, although it's like an odd activity. I always say, like, working out in the gym is so weird because you're just sitting there and doing, like, repetitive movements. Staying in shape is all about, like, you know, eating in moderation, but at the same time enjoying foods that you love and having cheat days where you go all out and then make yourself sick and throw up and then you don't want to eat for, like, a whole week.
That's the diet plan. There you go. It's right there. I love it. I love it. Look, there are any number of television shows out there that have really indistinct titles. Food to Get You Laid is not one of them.
No, not at all. That's what I love about it.
Talk to us about how this project came across your desk.
Yeah, funny enough, it's very serendipitous because me and my husband actually joked about doing a show about this because I'm a private chef in real life, and I do go into a different kitchen every time I work with a new client. And, you know, therapy and food actually go hand in hand a lot more than people think. And lots of times you'll hear chefs saying, food brings people together. But what does that really mean? And I think for me, coming from a psychology background, what it does is create a shared experience, which, you know, translates into a memory, a positive memory. And ultimately, a relationship is built upon positive memories. So the funny thing is we'd always joke about making a show about me helping couples out and, you know, while we're cooking, talk about the relationship. And then I could, you know, if they have a problem or something, we could talk about it, and then they could have a dinner and talk about that problem or that concern or whatever it is. So funny enough, the creators, sort of the executive producers of the show, pitched it to the production company, Dennis Thies, who are amazing. You know, I met with them. They told me the show. I was, like, jumping out of my seat. I was like, this is a perfect show.
Yay.
Literally, like, a combination of all my skills, all my education, rolled into one show. And that's sort of how it came about. You know, it was an obvious fit for the show. And then everything went from there, you know.
Oh, it's so fun. And I watch these episodes online. What is it like for you to work with Logo?
Logo is actually really great. You know, a lot of people think that, like, TV networks are, like, mean or they're hard asses, but Logo, the people there are so real and down to earth, and they actually take all my input. They really care about my well-being and my happiness, so it's been really amazing to work with them. I kind of want to keep them to myself and not let anyone else work with them because I'm like, I'm going to get less attention because they're really great about giving me a lot of attention, and I need a lot of attention, Ken.
You're on the right show. I love the idea that Logo's going to change the name of its network to Logo and then colon Ronnie Wu. I love that you want it.
That is the plan. Oh, my God. That would be amazing. Or they should just take Logo off and just change it to Ronnie Wu Network.
It's in the works, I hear. It's in development for the 2016 season. What was just one of the most exciting pieces about seeing this come to fruition?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I think the entire show coming into fruition was the most exciting thing. Because
yeah.
I just think that I wanted my first show to really be about sort of something I truly believed in and something that I actually practiced. Because I never want to be fake on television because I think that's really important to sort of practice what you preach.
Yeah.
For me, that hypocrisy is, I'm very against it. So in this case, this show was the perfect fit because I genuinely believe in these people that I'm working with, and I genuinely believe about their relationship concerns or issues or whatever they're bringing to the table. I feel like I've been there, someone else has been there, a friend's been there. Anyone can relate to a lot of these issues, and I think that's sort of what's most exciting about this, is that my first, you know, big TV show is something that I truly, truly believe in. So that makes it easy as well, as opposed to like having something that I don't really believe in or I have to fake it. In this case, all the energy is real, all the passion is real, and everything that you see me do and talk about is coming from a place of, you know, authenticity.
Nice. In the description of the show, it reads this quote, "Anyone can cook a meal in an industrial kitchen with the support of a full staff, but can they create a romantic meal in their own kitchen using only the ingredients in their fridge and pantry?" I would imagine, Ronnie, there are some things that you would like to see in people's pantries. You don't want it to be a total surprise, right? Like, what would you want to see there for them to work with?
Funny enough, I actually genuinely enjoy coming up with new dishes and ingredients from things that I kind of just find, because I kind of do that in my own life as well, because I am all about not wasting food.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to combine different things and sort of the leftovers of something and make it into something else. And so generally, there's not anything I would love to see. I think in general, I'd like to see like a protein, a couple pieces of produce, you know, a few sauces, a few herbs, a few spices. But ultimately, not to like pat myself on the back, but I can kind of make something out of nothing.
I love it. I love it. I would imagine any number of folks who are participating are nervous that they just can't pull off a meal. How do you walk them through that?
Well, the first thing I say to them, if they're really nervous or if I sense, you know, nervous energy, is that don't worry, I'm here to help you. I'm not here to make you look bad, because at the end of the night, you're going to look really, really good and your date's going to go really well. So as far as food is concerned, don't worry about it, because we will make something happen. You know, unless they literally have nothing in their kitchen, there's always things you can do. There's always ingredients that you can repurpose or, you know, do something with and make a really great meal. And that's sort of what I'm there to do, is to inspire them and to motivate them and sort of give them a little bit of a pat on the back, being like, you can do this too. And I think at the end of the night or the end of the day that we're done cooking, they feel a lot better about where they stand in the kitchen and even maybe where they stand with their relationship as well.
I mean, you can really see it. I will say, he's not going to like that I'm saying this on the air, Ronnie, but my boyfriend, perhaps not a virtuoso in the kitchen. And when I walk him through a meal, it's like his confidence increases immediately.
Uh-huh. It's true. What ultimately we're trying to do is sort of show each person in each episode that it's not really about what they're making or what the outcome is. It's more so that they're putting the effort in. And
yeah.
I think ultimately, when you put effort into something and your partner sees that, it builds confidence regardless of how good the food turns out. And so for you, you know, Ken, your partner, if he's in the kitchen, you're walking him through it, you're just building confidence, and that sort of just exudes sexiness and exudes, you know, and confidence.
Yes. Oh, totally. Can we do it from the reverse side too? I see now that maybe I should have been more supportive of the potatoes in the box. So from the other end of people supporting their aspiring chefs, how can we be more supportive of our partners who are trying to cook?
Well, potatoes in a box are always the first step. You know, we have to start somewhere, right? It's like cake in a box is the first step.
There you go.
You have to feel comfortable with certain steps. But I think the best way to support your partner cooking or doing something for you in general is to just positively reinforce them. You know, if someone puts the effort out for you, regardless of what it is, whether it's cooking or if it's planning a date or planning a day out, like even if it's not your favorite thing or the food doesn't taste good or something, you just have to acknowledge the effort that your partner's putting into it, because ultimately that's what's going to get them to keep doing what they're doing. And ultimately, I believe that all a partner really wants is effort.
Yeah. I'm feeling bad about the potatoes in the box response now. I'm feeling really bad about that.
I go home and cry about it.
I'll work on that. Again, listeners, we're here with Ronnie Wu, insanely talented professional chef, culinary personality. Folks can go right now on logotv.com and they can watch Food to Get You Laid. I would imagine you're already getting such a great response.
I am, and people are loving it. It's funny because the title of the show is a little disarming. I mean, it's not disarming. It's actually misleading, I would say.
Okay.
That the show itself is not actually about sex or about one-night stands. It's actually really about how we can use food and how we can use effort and improve our relationships with whoever we may be in a relationship with. You know, we have couples that are long-standing couples who have been together for a long time. We also have couples that are new. We also have, like, a couple where someone is trying to woo the other and take them out of friend zone. So there's a lot of different types of couples in different various stages of their relationship. And so I think when people actually see the show, they actually see that it has a lot more substance. It has a lot of depth to the show. And if you like cooking, there is a lot of cooking takeaway in this show. So regardless of what you're watching it for, whether it's the relationship part or the cooking part, you will take something away from it.
I love it. Ronnie, I need some free tips right now, man. So give me some.
What do you need? Tell me.
I need some cooking tips. What is something that everyone should know that's so super easy that will wow your partner?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one. Well, in the show, there's something that I always bring. I don't bring anything except three things to each person's home. And those three things are salt, pepper, and a type of fat. And the story behind that is that my mom growing up was always concerned about my skin care because she's very, like, my mom is a beautiful woman and she's all about taking care of her skin. And she always say, make sure you put your SPF on. And so jokingly as a chef, I always say, don't worry, mom, I have my SPF. Which, in my words, means salt, pepper, and fat. I think that's the biggest thing for people in the kitchen is just remember you need to have some sort of fat to develop flavor, and then salt and pepper, you need to season it. I think if you have those three things, you can actually make a really great meal with whatever you have because it will always have flavor in some way or another.
Now, I have to tell you, sir, in the episodes, including in the recipes that are online, which I love that there are recipes online associated with the show, there is a scallops recipe, and I have watched enough Top Chef to know that that is the ingredient that trips up everybody, and you're having people do scallops.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's funny because I feel like I'm trying to, in the first episode, we do cook scallops because that's what, you know, the couple likes to eat, and that's what they have in their fridge. And I think ultimately what I'm trying to help people realize is that there are just a few simple tips that are kind of across the board for all proteins. It applies to seafood. It applies to steaks, red meats. It's really about drying out your proteins, like the surface of your protein, and then not crowding them in the pan. And it's funny because I think a lot of people after that episode tried scallops, and I think after taking my tips, they really gained a lot more confidence in cooking seafood, and especially scallops, because I always feel like scallops are like you said, they trip people up and they're kind of scary, but ultimately if you remember the few rules, it really is really quite easy, and it's very quick. They're like a very quick protein to cook.
Nice. Now, I have to tell you, guess what I'm making tomorrow for some friends?
Scallops?
No, not even a chance. But I am making, no, I wouldn't even know. But I am making coconut rice pudding with mangoes and strawberries.
Oh, you are? That's a great dessert because you can make like you can make that a day in advance and it will still be delicious. And it's pretty.
I'm so excited. Where are you hoping this show goes?
I'm really hoping that people just watch the show and get inspired and motivated by it. I'd love to have multiple seasons of it, and I just would love for people to realize that cooking is less about sort of what comes out of your kitchen, but more of what you put into the kitchen. And in that way, like, what I mean by that is just put effort into your relationship, whether you cook something for your partner or you plan a date somewhere else. But whatever it is, I just want the show to motivate and inspire people, sort of do things for their partner. And in this case, it would be cooking. So I just love the show to go on and on so people can just get motivated in the kitchen because food is so big and it's, you know, it's a universal language. And I just think that relationships and food go hand in hand. And that's sort of what I want people to see. And ultimately, I just want to better relationships because that's what my education is. And I ultimately, you know, I originally wanted to become a relationships therapist, but given my personality being too blunt, I think the food world's a better way of helping people and their relationships.
I'm telling you, Ronnie, you can't watch these episodes and see you doing this work without thinking he was made to do this. It's like the perfect show for you, man.
Oh, thank you, Ken. I really appreciate it. I feel that it's the perfect show for me, too. I feel like when I'm in the kitchen helping these people, I feel very much in my element and just happy to do it. You know, there's nothing forced. It's very natural for me.
Can you sing the praises of your husband's culinary skills? I feel like he's picked up quite a bit over the years.
Funny enough, he has picked up quite a bit of, I would say, tips and information. I don't know if he's picked up the skills necessarily, but his best dish is a sausage stir fry with broccoli and green peas, which is essentially, you know, pre-made sausages cut up and then stir-fried with some broccoli and some peas. But the funny thing is, when he makes that, I love it because it brings back a lot of memories from the very first meal that he made me. So I will never turn down a meal made by my husband, nor will I ever put down something he makes.
There you go. Did you have other people cater your wedding? I would think that would be difficult for you.
Oh my God, we totally did. We absolutely did. My husband was like, you, because trust me, I'm like a perfectionist and I like to be in control of things. I'm a little OCD. He was like, by no means are you allowed to cater your own wedding. And I was like, well, what about if I just made this? He's like, no. And I was like, okay, fine. So we actually got married at the Sunset Marquee and we've eaten there multiple times. So I trusted their chef there and they did a really good job. But I'm definitely not as picky as people probably assume that I am. I think a lot of chefs are just happy for other people to cook for them, to be honest.
There you go. Now, will you be continuing with the Delicious Cook blog?
Yes. So the Delicious Cook is actually, it's like a hybrid of a blog and then my private chef service. So, you know, I still do, you know, premium high-end dinner parties for clients as well, and occasionally post the recipes. Just kind of depends on what time allows. But I try to stay pretty up to date with all the things that are going on. So whether it's keeping people posted on the show or keeping recipes posted on the website, and then obviously working with my clients on a regular basis.
Nice. There are rumors abounding about a possible cookbook in 2016.
Yes, there are rumors. It's all sort of coming together, but I'm the kind of person who never likes to say, yes, it is happening for sure until it's in my hand.
There you go. You know what is actually happening? That would be Food to Get You Laid there on logotv.com. You can watch episodes there. I just have to imagine that you are so proud of this because when folks see the quality of these episodes and see this, it's not just a cooking show and it's not a sex advice show. When they see just the depth that's actually there and it's entertaining, you just have to be so proud, Ronnie.
I am incredibly proud of it. I mean, honestly, I feel so lucky that I've got to work with the people that I've got to work with because the executive producers are Elon Hall from Top Chef 2. He won. And he's like the nicest guy. And then Rich Kim is a creative director of Project Runway. And he's also like the nicest people. And then the guys at Den of Thieves are like the coolest, hippest guys ever. So I feel like I'm surrounded by not only a great concept, it feels like I was only given a great concept, but also surrounded by the most amazing people. So it is something that I'm very proud of. It's a beautiful show. It's shot beautifully. Everything about it, I'm very, very proud of. So, yes.
As you should be. Listeners, this is where you go. You go to logotv.com to watch full episodes of Food to Get You Laid. You can stroll on over to thedeliciouscook.com. There are recipes there. I kind of want to try this vanilla bean and lemon pavlova. That sounds exciting. Very exciting stuff.
It's very easy, and that's another thing you can make in advance as well. I'm all about making your life easier, to be honest with you, although the recipes maybe slightly complicated when you first look at them, but they're honestly not if you break it down into the different pieces that they actually are.
So much fun. Ronnie, what an absolute treat having you on the show. Just the most and ginormous success with these episodes as more and more are released and as you move forward with this. It's just such a joy to watch this and see you doing it because you're just so made for it.
Aw, thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate those words. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of work, but I think fun is sort of the best way to describe this entire experience.
Everybody go check out Food to Get You Laid. Ronnie, all the best.
Thank you so much, Ken. Hope you have a great day.
All right, folks, and we are back with our second amazing guest. Maritza Martinez is the director of Somos Familia, an organization whose mission is to create support and acceptance for Latina and Latino, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or questioning youth and their families. She is also an organizational development consultant working with organizations from across the country in fields including diversity, leadership, environment, education, and innovation. She wrote just the most beautiful piece for the Huffington Post recently entitled How Hashtag Love Wins for All, and I just had to have her on the show to talk all about her work, and here she is. Maritza, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. Glad to be here.
We're thrilled to have you. We have so much ground to cover. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's start generally. Why nonprofit work to get your voice out there?
Ooh, that's a big question. I was sucked into the nonprofit world at a very young age.
Nice.
So in high school, one of my classmates was like, I know a way that we can get paid $10 an hour. And I was like, ooh, how do we do that? And it was through a nonprofit organization in Queens, New York, where I'm from, called ACQC, the Queens County AIDS Center. And they were training peer educators, teens, to educate each other about HIV. And that's how I got sucked in. And I was like, why would I ever want to do anything else that's, you know, I can make $10 an hour and help somebody in my community?
Yeah. And I think we often gloss over that, of course, in our hyper-focus on what kind of hourly wage can we make and what kind of salary can we make. And so many people scoff at the idea of working for nonprofits. Can we talk about the emotional side of working for nonprofits? What do you get out of it?
Oh, my God, so much. One, the opportunity to meet folks that you would never meet in, you know, your day-to-day setting if you are, you know, in corporate America or, you know, anywhere else in the workforce. You just meet so many amazing people and learn so many amazing stories from folks in our communities and in our towns and states. And it's just a really amazing way to get to know folks, to really know what is happening in our communities. You know, sometimes when something is happening in our families or in our communities, we tend to hide it and keep it in. And working in this kind of a role, you get to really know people in a different way than you would, than the face that they present to you. You sort of start to peel back to the layers and really get to know folks.
I love it. Now, one of my favorite narrative threads that we've heard on this show over the past 7 years were folks who not only came out of the closet, but had to come out of that professional closet where they had to convince their families that they were going to do nonprofit work. How was it with you and your family?
I think, you know, religion had a really big influence. I'm from a Catholic Cuban family.
Yeah.
And I think that the idea of doing good for others was not a hard sell.
Nice.
So in that sense, I didn't have to come out of that closet, although I'm sure that my family would love for me to be making, you know, buku bucks and helping helping everyone out in that way. But I think it wasn't a big stretch for folks.
We're going to see how it works if you and I get our families together. Maybe they can just console each other about the buku bucks we're not making. It's fine. It's fine. You wrote in that Huffington Post piece, which I love, and we're going to link to it for everybody. You wrote this quote, as a queer Latina, I felt I had to choose between my culture and my sexual orientation, between my neighborhood and my LGBTQ community, and between my family's given and chosen. Being queer and Latina meant being labeled as other in my family and community. How did that fuel your desire to move forward and help other communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a young person, I think I thought that I was like the weirdest person in the world. I didn't feel like I fit in my family, in that I was the first one born in the U.S. and like I had more multicultural friends. I went to like a magnet kind of high school. Like I just had a very different experience than everyone else I knew in my family, and then within my community, in terms of LGBT folks and the folks that I knew in the world, you know, there weren't that many Latina role models out there for me. And I think, I don't know that fueled for me to, you know, I've done lots of behind the scenes work. So I don't know that it really fueled me to be like, I want to be out there and, you know, be the gay Latina.
Right.
But I definitely felt the void.
Yeah. You know, I read in your bio, and you just mentioned Queens earlier, that you're a recovering New Yorker. I would imagine it was difficult to move out there. As a New Yorker myself, I would imagine moving out to California, that would have been some sort of transition for you.
It was a huge transition. There's, you know, there's lots of New Yorkers here in the Bay Area, and I think we stick together in a way. I keep meeting New Yorkers in the last 4 years that I've been here, but it has been a drastic change. There's lots of things that are very different about the Bay, but I love the weather. I love the folks here, and you know, I keep hearing stories from my friends in New York about how icy it is and how dreadfully hot it is, and I think Oakland, California has the absolute best weather in the country.
There you go. That's brought to you by the Oakland Tourism Board, represented on this show. That was awesome. That was awesome. Well, before we move on to more of your professional work, you just gave this a shout out when we were off the air. We just had Ronnie Wu on the show, celebrity chef, and you mentioned cooking. Is that a big part of your life?
Oh, yes. I love to cook. And, you know, growing up in a Latina family, cooking is life for us. It was life for us. And, you know, I became vegetarian in high school, and I think one of my passions is trying to translate the foods that I loved in my youth that were filled with meat and pork and all of these things that I no longer eat, and how do I translate those for myself? So I just love cooking and experimenting with different kinds of foods.
As one vegetarian to another, tell me what your go-to recipe is that's going to knock my socks off. I'm ready.
Oh, so I just got a slow cooker, and I have been experimenting with different things, and I learned how to make lasagna in there, and
that
has
been
phenomenal. You just put it in, and in a couple of hours, you have a lasagna.
All right. I'm going back to the lasagna. I'm ready to try it.
I'll send you some express mail.
That works. All right. We have so much to talk about with Somos Familia. First, how did this organization come into your life?
How did it come into my life?
Yes.
So I was working at a different nonprofit, an environmental nonprofit, and a colleague of mine said, hey, check out this video. And it's a video called Tres Gotas de Agua, Three Drops of Water, that's on the Somos Familia website. And I saw it, and all of a sudden I was just crying, bawling at my desk at work, because it's the story of three accepting Latina immigrant moms and how they discovered or how their kids came out to them and then what their process of reconciliation was. And it's an amazing video. It's only 15 minutes long, 3 5-minute stories. And then my colleague came back by my desk a little while later and was like, do you want to be introduced to one of the founders of this organization? I think that you two would get along great. And I was like, still wiping the tears away, and I said, please introduce me to them. And that's how I met Lauren Mayeno and Mirna Medina, who are the two moms that started Somos Familia.
And the story behind Somos Familia is so incredible. Talk to us about these incredible two moms.
Yes, so these two amazing moms. Lauren had a gender nonconforming child and was sort of trying to figure out as a single mom how to navigate school and life with her child. And then Mirna accidentally found out. She picked up her son's phone and saw a conversation he was having that her son was bisexual, and turned to her best friend Lauren, who she knew was grappling with these issues, and they just couldn't find resources that were really supporting them, and they felt isolated, and so they were like, let's do this ourselves. They got a group of other moms that they knew from around the community together and started just supporting each other, and almost immediately organizations started asking them to come speak as like these, you know, model moms in the community while they were still trying to figure this out. And the very first speaking engagement Somos Familia did was at a Catholic church during Holy Week for 500 parishioners.
Wow.
And so, you know, the moms were terrified, but they knew that this is what they had to do to really create a space for their kids in the community.
Even as a gay Jew, I know that's a pretty major week.
Yeah. It is huge. I mean, it's the week everyone goes to church.
Yeah. Wow. You wrote in that Huffington Post piece, quote, "The goal is not for every family to join their local pride parade, but even moderate levels of family acceptance are proven to reduce health risks for LGBTQ people." I mean, Marissa, we're really talking about saving the lives of our young brothers and sisters and working with them towards healthy acceptance.
We are. We absolutely are. There was a study, not to get all academic on you, from the Family Acceptance Project that looked at just that, the health impacts of rejection and acceptance on LGBTQ teens, and they found that those youth that were accepted by their families had 8 times less prevalence of suicide and 6 times less prevalence of drug and alcohol use.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it really is a matter of our kids' health, and that's, you know, that's actually what led me to write the Huffington Post article, because I think if you ask any parent if you can reduce the chances of suicide or of substance abuse of your kid, would you do it? They would say yes. And so here's a way to do it.
Yeah. Oh, it's such important work. Such important work. So we have kind of the baseline of parents making things safer for their LGBTQ sons and daughters, for their children. But then on top of all this, we have Latino, Latina identity. How does that change this work?
I think it changes it in a way of, you know, how we approach it.
Yeah.
How, you know, how do we use things from our own culture, from our countries, to really frame this work in a way that's understandable, that touches folks. We use storytelling a lot. And I think that in order to transform our communities, we really need to show that there are folks in our communities, folks that we look up to, folks that are just like us, that are LGBTQ, that are accepting parents, that are, you know, allied siblings. We just need to show, to model it, because I think more often than not what we see is, you know, there was a murder here, or this person was bullied, or this person was attacked. So what we need to show is just accepting role models in our community, and, you know, really reaching folks in a personal one-to-one, you know, this is my story kind of way.
Yeah. Again, listeners, we're talking to Maritza Martinez, the director of Somos Familia. Let's talk nuts and bolts. What are you guys out there doing? You mentioned storytelling. You mentioned connecting to folks. What are you doing on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so there are 3 main pieces of our work. One piece is support, and we do that. We support families of LGBTQ folks, primarily Spanish language speakers, on a one-to-one basis. So if somebody is in crisis, if somebody's son just came out or just, you know, tried to commit suicide, or there's some other situation within the family and someone's in crisis, we connect them to another parent who maybe has gone through a similar situation or can at least listen and share their own experiences. And that's to keep folks from feeling like they're out there on their own trying to figure these things out. And then we do some group events, right? We just want to get folks in a space with other accepting families so that they don't feel alone.
Yeah.
They don't feel like they're these, you know, freaks in their community that have a different family situation. So we just create a space, create our own community of accepting families of LGBTQ folks, and have a lot of fun. The second aspect of our work is education. So we go into schools and community organizations, churches on occasion, and we do some education work. We teach, you know, LGBTQ 101. This might be the first time that some of these families are ever talking about gender versus assigned sex,
yeah,
or what does it mean to be gay, or what does it mean to be bisexual, right? And they'll call you out on questions. So I have a colleague who, who identifies as queer, and she told this whole story, and then she told her personal story, and they're like, "Wait, that sounds like you're bisexual." So they'll, you know, there's listening and education that we do in these different organizations, and we talk to both families and practitioners to help to create these safe spaces within our community. And then the third piece of our work is really leadership development. And so I'm the only staff person for Somos Familia. We're all volunteer run. And so part of our work is to develop the skills of these amazing cadre of volunteers that makes the organization run, and really make sure that they're being supported as they're moving this work forward.
That's a lot. That's a lot. What does success look like to you?
Oh, so much. So success can be, you know, just one. For me, you know, every single time that a family comes to us and walks away with a positive experience and a different dynamic within the family, that's absolute success. That's why we do what we do. But I think it's also the changing dynamic. One of the agencies we work with, the executive director, you know, told us this story about a young person in their class who did a drag show for all of the classmates, and they, you know, they all like whipped out little pieces of paper and, you know, asked for the performer's autograph, and they were all so excited, and you know, that dynamic wouldn't be possible without us going in and like talking to the teachers in the school about this issue and like about young people being able to express themselves, and identify the way they identify. So it's creating those spaces and transforming what school means. In my school, that would not have been possible. Even in high school, there was one kid who came in a dress one day and was ridiculed.
Yeah.
For the rest of the time. So I think, you know, and this was a much younger, I believe, seventh grader or something. So I think, you know, making that space in community for folks to be themselves.
As I look at different materials, as I look at our different national organizations, you know, you and I briefly talked via email about language. And there's not a lot of bilingual information and resources being put out there, which I would imagine is a barrier to some of the work that you're doing.
It is, and I think even for us, like, we've just this year created a toolkit that we'll be uploading soon about how to talk within your family about gender and sexual orientation at different stages and at different times. But I think even just creating things, the more that we can create things that are not text-heavy and more, you know, easier for folks to connect to, as we know in this social media world, we want to watch videos and not read pages and pages of text. So I think, you know, beginning to transform the way that we get information out there, not only language, but just making it easy for folks who perhaps have, you know, literacy or other barriers.
Yeah. It strikes me that this work is incredibly personal for you. How do you approach, I don't know, do you separate out the personal and professional? Does it motivate you more? How do you keep that part either in check or exploit it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's definitely a motivator. As, you know, the more young folks that I meet, the more, you know, even folks within my family that have come out since I have, I think it's definitely a motivator. For me, my personal experience and the work that I do, mm-hmm. you know, outside of Somos Familia as well, there's, you know, all the work that I think that I've done has come from a personal place, and that's part of what keeps me going.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this, but sometimes this type of work can be a little bit draining and exhausting.
What?
I know. I didn't want to break that to you on the air, but I felt like you knew already. How do you keep yourself going? How do you take that time to re-energize?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, having great folks in my life. I've been with my partner for 16 years, and she keeps me grounded and makes me take weekends when I can. And just really having some separation. It's hard because my office is in my house.
Yeah.
But having some separation and having fun is always really important. Having hobbies like cooking and other things, it's just important. To step back sometimes, but go hard.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when she insists that you take vacation, are you one of those people that's able to disconnect, or do you still have your finger on the pulse of everything that's happening?
I'm pretty good at disconnecting.
Nice.
I think part of, you know, cell phone culture is that you're always reachable.
Indeed.
So I, you know, most people find that draining, but I find that, like, if I can just, you know, check email a couple of times a day and let it go, it works for me.
Okay.
I don't get wrapped up in it.
We have all of these people listening all over the country. What can they do to support you guys, to move your work forward?
Well, I think, you know, family acceptance is something that's not being talked about as much as I think it needs to be because of, you know, all of this recent research that has come forward about the importance of how that one thing can really transform the lives of our LGBTQ youth, our LGBTQ people in general. So I think really putting family acceptance on the forefront on our gay agenda is going to be really important. I also, you know, we're always accepting donations. We're a small nonprofit, so if folks want to donate to us, that would be fantastic. And then we also, as I said, are run on volunteers. So, you know, if folks are in the Bay Area or want to get involved virtually, we welcome you.
I know that you do. My favorite question for any executive director who's ever been on this show, I give you the floor to extol the virtues of your volunteers.
Our volunteers are truly amazing. They are all somehow connected to the mission of the organization, either as family members or LGBTQ folks themselves, and they are the hardest working folks I've ever met in my life. Most of our work is done in the evenings because they have 9-to-5 jobs, and they come right after and work their butts off to help move the work of Somos Familia forward, and I truly appreciate every second that they give to the organization. And we couldn't do this work without them.
Not that you wouldn't turn down donations to hire a full-time staff.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
We would love that. That is something that we have been working to do for the past couple of years, to get someone here full-time. And it would be great to be able to achieve that this year.
Yes, and I think your partner agrees. I think that's out there. One of my favorite things that you guys do, and again, I've been touring through your website, and everyone needs to stroll on over, and we'll give you the link again in a few minutes, but everyone needs to stroll on over to SomosFamiliaBay.org, because there's so many great things and so many resources on there and an upcoming toolkit. But in looking at your past events and some of the things coming up, one of my favorite things that you guys do is that you have a presence at various film festivals and various movie screenings. And I have to tell you, even on a personal level, when I read this, I thought, oh yeah, that's right. My grandmother and I never sat down and had a conversation about my being gay, but we went to a movie together and that started the conversation. We went to a screening of an LGBT film. And I hear that so much from my LGBTQ brothers and sisters, that movies open the door to family acceptance.
They do, and we recently, you probably saw on our website, had a film screening of a film called El Canto del Colibrí, The Song of the Hummingbird. And this tells the story of five Latino immigrant fathers and their LGBTQ kids. And, you know, when the first film came out, Three Drops of Water, folks were like, yeah, but what about the dads? And this is just, these are five profound stories of dads, and we screened that to over 110 people here in Oakland, and there were tears, and there were, you know, parents and children holding hands, like holding each other up, and it was just so beautiful to see these connections and to see, you know, to show, look, they're dads, these, you know, stereotypically machista, like, strong fathers accept their kids and, you know, love them unconditionally. And I think those are really important stories to tell that other mediums maybe couldn't get across in the same way.
Yeah. Oh, it's such beautiful stuff. Now, we are more likely to have listeners of this show who are LGBT youth who are seeking family acceptance than we probably are of families who want to increase their acceptance. That's just, we're going with the odds on that one. What do you have to say to our young LGBTQ brothers and sisters who are out there seeking that family acceptance?
You know, we've all been there.
Yeah.
Lots of us that are adults now, we've all been there, and it is so important to be your true self, because that's, you know, we can't live in, you know, pretending to be someone that we're not, because it just is not good for our own mental health. But I think that as a young person, it is really important to make sure that you're in a safe space, and to really understand your family situation as you're thinking about coming out, and to seek help from local organizations and other folks that can provide you support. I think, you know, there's something like 40 or 45% of homeless youth identify as LGBTQ, and I think family acceptance is a big reason for that. And yeah. So I think that it's very important to weigh the consequences and make sure that you're safe and you have a contingency plan as a young person.
So important. So important. Again, listeners, we need you to go right now, strolling over to SomosFamiliaBay.org. You said this in your Huffington Post piece, and this is what I want to close with. You wrote, supporting LGBTQ people in your family and community is transformative and makes a true difference. My hope, Maritza, on behalf of all of our listeners, and honoring the work that you and all of your volunteers are doing, my hope is that you really do have a sense of how much you are transforming lives and what a huge difference you guys are making. It is such an honor to just feature Somos Familia on the show and to hear your great words about this really vital and important work.
Thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate it. And I hope that everyone listening to the show will stroll on over to our website, as you said, Somos Familia. Bay.org.
You got it. Please, please keep doing this work.
Thank you. We will. We will.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we do not have that much time left on this week's episode. Really only time for one more story. And if we're going to pick one story of the week, I'm not really sure that we could pick any other story than our good new friend, Kim Davis. Kim Davis is everywhere. Everywhere on the internet, it's all about Kim Davis. So Kim Davis is the Kentucky clerk who says that she is following, quote, God's word in her refusal to grant marriage licenses to same-sex couples. She's a longtime civil servant. She has a history of marital struggles. It is the story that just keeps on giving. If you have not seen the video of couples trying to get married and Kim Davis just absolutely refusing them. So her act of resistance, it has rocked this small Appalachia community. It's 60 miles east of Lexington, and it has made headlines nationwide, largely because of this video of her denying a marriage license to David Moore and his partner of 17 years, David Ermold. The confrontation this week, it sparked a protest inside the Rowan County Courthouse with supporters of the couple and of Davis shouting over each other. A similar scene unfolded this week on Wednesday when a second same-sex couple asked for a marriage license. It just keeps going. There are rallies to support Kim Davis with thousands of people saying, yes, we support her. And all in the midst of all of this, Kim Davis refuses to resign. So many different aspects of this story. I'm telling you, we could do a whole episode just on Kim Davis. So she is facing possible contempt charges. That's where this is at right now. It'll probably change, by the way, by the time you hear the airing of this episode, because it just continues to evolve and evolve. She is being considered that she be held in contempt of court for refusing to issue these same-sex marriage licenses. She's saying that if she was held in contempt of court, it would violate her right to due process and religious freedom. So she is refusing to comply with a Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage. It is the final act of what she calls religious opposition to the ruling. She said this is a matter of, quote, heaven or hell. I'm telling you, it doesn't end. It doesn't end. Attorneys for Kim Davis argue that she cannot be penalized that she cannot be penalized for defying the court's order to issue marriage licenses because she is unable to comply because, quote, it irreparably and irreversibly violates her conscience by directing her to issue marriage licenses bearing her name and approval to gay couples. If the court holds her in contempt, her attorneys argue, it would be violating her right to due process. It goes on. So many different aspects of the story. Marco Rubio, he's getting involved. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida said this week that the government should respect the beliefs of Kim Davis. That's what he's saying. Marco Rubio said that the government should respect. That's fine. We respect her beliefs. She still has to do her job. He said this, quote, "We should seek a balance between government's responsibility to abide by the laws of our republic and allowing people to stand by their religious convictions." He continued to say, quote, "While the clerk's office has a governmental duty to carry out the law, there should be a way to protect the religious freedom and conscience rights of individuals working in the office." End quote. What on earth is he talking about? He is making a distinction. He is allowing for people to say, no, I'm sorry. I cannot do that because it's against my beliefs. I don't care that the government is telling me to. And he is a senator. I just don't see how we're not extrapolating this out to other areas of government. It's quite remarkable. There's great stories out there saying that Justice Scalia would absolutely support the impeachment of Kim Davis. That Justice Scalia would absolutely be against everything that Marco Rubio just said. Now, Justice Scalia at no point has made any sort of statement on Kim Davis. It's being extrapolated out because of something that he wrote in 2002. Scalia explained in a piece in 2002 that if he were to conclude that the death penalty is fundamentally immoral, he should no longer serve on the bench. He said this, quote, "While my views on the morality of the death penalty have nothing to do with how I vote as a judge, they have a lot to do with whether I can or should be a judge at all. To put the point in the blunt terms employed by Justice Harold Blackmun towards the end of his career on the bench, when he announced that he would henceforth vote to overturn all death sentences, when I sit on the court that reviews and affirms capital convictions, I am part of the machinery of death. My vote, when joined with at least four others, is, in most cases, the last step that permits an execution to proceed. I could not take part in that process if I believed what was being done to be immoral." So again, Justice Scalia saying absolutely nothing specifically about Kim Davis or about same-sex marriage. He's not saying anything about that. But folks extrapolating out from his comments on the death penalty that, hey, if you think that this thing is immoral, then that's fine. You get to think that thing's immoral, but you have to take yourself out of the picture. And Kim Davis refuses to do that. What I don't love are all the attacks on Kim Davis, particularly any misogynistic attacks. I'm fine with people noting the hypocrisy that this woman has been married four times. This woman has been married four times. She said in a quote, "I have no animosity towards anyone and harbor no ill will. To me, this has never been a gay or lesbian issue. It is about marriage and God's word." And yet this is a woman that has been married four times. Let's be critical of that. If you've not seen, Dan Savage has great quotes about Kim Davis and the fact that she's been married four times and the hypocrisy of all of that. But we do not endorse any misogynistic comments. That does nothing to further our stance. That does nothing to solidify our arguments. That does nothing for anyone. So no misogynistic arguments. Let's just stay with the fact that she's been married for four times. And she said, quote, "It is about marriage and God's word." It's unbelievable. My last point on this is when she had the confrontation on camera with these gentlemen who were trying to get married, I thought of particular significance and where more attention should be focused. She said, "I need you to move away because you're interrupting." And she said this, quote, "My business." When a government official so fundamentally is wrong about what the function of government is, when she calls it my business, when there is that proprietary atmosphere in that place, I don't even understand how we can get any headway at all to having her see, no, this is not the way it works. It's actually not your business. It's all of our business, and you have a duty to carry out the law. And there it is, Kim Davis. We could do a whole episode, but we're not, because we're done with this week's episode. Our huge, huge thanks to Ronnie Wu. What an amazing new show, Food to Get You Laid, that you should check out. And our thanks, of course, to Maritza Martinez and everybody over there at Somos Familia. Check them out as well. Hey, you guys, you go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?